Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, J. Michael Michael here for LA Talk Radio. And you know, while you're on furlough or just playing staying home because of the coronavirus, if you're working at home, what better way to pass your day than to tune in to www.latalkradio.com and listen to some of our fine broadcasting during the day. We have a lot to offer, we have a lot on the air, so give us a listen. Right now, we've got one of your favorites. LA Talk Radio's very own The Writer's Block, and it's coming at you right now, so kick back, relax, and enjoy. And one thing J. Michael Michael doesn't say is pour yourself that bourbon. Well, you know, I decided to shoot Stephanie her same opening she had 5 years ago. Four and a half. Using the theme from Star Trek. This is a cheap show, Stephanie. We don't like to keep buying music.
Hey, you know what? You have no idea what that did for me because that show was one of my first introductions to science fiction.
Really?
Really. And I love that theme music.
Oh, and I've always loved that theme music. So it works out well. It plays well. That's the deal.
It does. It does. But to have that as the lead in to the interview with me was, that gives me goosebumps practically.
Well, Stephanie Osborne is an award-winning interstellar woman of mystery. She's a 20-year space program veteran, graduate undergraduate degrees in astronomy, physics, chemistry, and math, and fluent in several more subjects. She's the author, a co-author, or contributor to nearly 50 books, including the celebrated Burnout, The Mystery of Space Shuttle, STS-281, and the Kresperian Saga. She writes the critically acclaimed Displaced Detective series, the Gentleman Ages series, and the latest, the Division One series. Her take on the urban legend of the mysterious people who make the evidence disappear, she pays it forward, teaching STEM, S-T-E-M, through numerous media, including ebooks, radio, podcasting, and public speaking, and working with Sigma, the science fiction think tank. Please welcome back to the Writer's Block, Miss Stephanie Osborne.
Yeah.
Yay!
Makes evidence disappear. Oh, we want to hear more about that.
Creates huge moths. I have to say, getting into this book, when I first started reading it, the characters sounded vaguely familiar. Omega and Echo. And I thought, wait a minute, those showed up in a book that we talked about 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And this is the 12th book in this series.
Yes, I've been busy.
You have?
You have.
Careful, your degrees are showing. Pull them up, pull them up.
Well, I've actually got quite a few more books in the series planned. And it's so funny because I'm just coming off finishing another book.
Uh-huh.
I got invited to write in an author friend's universe. Excuse me if I'm a little hoarse. The pollen is just nuts around here. I got invited to write in an author friend's universe called the Empire series. And I just came off, he writes that series in trilogies. So I'm writing the third trilogy in the series.
Oh, wow.
And I just finished book one of that trilogy. And so I thought, well, I'm going to take a day or two off and just kind of relax.
yeah, how did that work out for you?
Well, I've done it before, and it's not a problem, but I always it's a little more tense making for me. Because I don't want to screw up his universe. I don't want to screw up his storyline, you know.
Sure.
I want to do right by him. So Richard Wayne, he's really cool. He's a good writer. He's really laid back about it, and he's like, "You'll do fine. Don't sweat it." But still, you know, I was like, "Okay, so I'm going to take a day off," you know. So I took the rest of the evening off and piddled around and played video games, and I crashed, and I got up the next day, and it was like, doggone it, I dreamed another Division I book.
I think so, I saw that you posted that on Facebook.
Yes. So I sat down, I spent a couple of hours, I sat down and I wrote out, I mean, I had the whole flipping plot. So I just sat down and wrote it all out in a note file and stuck it in the appropriate folder and on my laptop. And when I get around to it, I'll write it. But that makes another at least six books in this series to go.
Gotcha.
Wow.
I did that once. I dreamt a whole book, and I woke up and I actually remembered the whole book.
Yeah.
So I wrote it.
I do that sort of thing every once in a while. Back when I was working the shuttle program, I was actually on a mission. And so we were working like 12-hour shifts and plus handovers. And so I got off shift and I came. Basically, you've got enough time to come home, piddle around, get things ready for the next day, mm-hmm. crash, get up, get ready, and head out. That's mm-hmm. really all you've got time for. So I crashed and dreamed my way through an entire shift and was just just uplinking the products to the shuttle when the alarm went off.
Oh, my gosh.
Don't you hate that?
I was like, crud, I got to get up and do that all over again. I'm not even rested, you know.
Oh, wow.
Well, if you wouldn't mind, kind of give our listeners a little bit of a backstory as to what this particular book is about. As we know, we're following Echo and Omega once again, and they belong to Alpha One, which is their police department in this particular era. And where are they going and what are they doing in this book?
Well, okay. So there is, in the Division I series, there is a galactic civilization and there is a galactic government. And all governments have to have, you know, law enforcement. So they have a law enforcement department. And the galaxy is divided up into what we would consider precincts called Division. And Earth is in Division One, hence the name of the series.
Right.
So Echo and Omega are, you know, these are the eponymous men in black of urban legend and movie and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So I'm playing off the same urban legends as the movies, but I kind of go in a different direction with it. So in this particular instance, it's a case of what if an alien creature was inadvertently brought to Earth as an egg. And the container with the egg in it gets lost. And the creature hatches. And the creature is not from a planet remotely like Earth. What might happen? So that's the concept. And it's the actual scientific name for the creature is an exoheteroch, which is basically a way of saying it's an alien butterfly.
Okay. you lost me at name of the creature.
Yeah. Like, how do I write that? What's that word again? I remember seeing that word in the copy.
Exoheteroch.
Exoheteroch. Back up. about a year or two when I happened to catch one of the cable channels airing all of the various and sundry Godzilla and related movies.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
I get a huge kick out of Mothra.
Oh.
Yeah. So I thought,
I kind of thought that's where they came from.
You know what? You know what? I bet, you know, if I sat down and I worked out the science so that it actually made a certain amount of sense, I might be able to do this. And so I sat down. I've got a friend that I still hang out with when I can. We go all the way back to graduate school together. He's a PhD physicist, and he's you know, he's still doing the DOD stuff. And so I sat down with him and we started brainstorming, what would you need to have a creature like that actually exist? It doesn't have to be it only loosely resembles what we would consider a moth or a butterfly or something like that, but it doesn't necessarily have to have the same internal structure and stuff. Mm-hmm. So we just started brainstorming, and we actually came up with characteristics for the creature that would enable it to exist on Earth at that size, to be able to fly. And it turns out that when you start looking at that, it really can wreak all sorts of damage.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens when this thing is turned loose in New York City? And that's kind of the jumping off point for the book. It is book 12 in the series, so there's follow-on stuff from previous books.
Mm-hmm.
Echo mm-hmm. has been badly injured, and mm-hmm. he's still recuperating, and some things like that. So there's that aspect also. So there's a fair amount of character building in this one. Partly because I just had fans saying, we'd love to see this, mm-hmm. and we'd love to see this. And, oh, no, you have to put all of that in there. And
right.
I was like, okay. so
a
you
little
know,
romance.
The entire series has an overarching character arc in it.
Mm-hmm.
And that character arc does contain a romance,
right?
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's not the be all end all of the books. The books basically they're action adventure.
Mm-hmm.
So, I have a lot of fun. I have a lot of fun writing them. They're action adventure. I tell people that I write these books with my tongue planted so firmly in my cheek that it's poking out the side of my face.
Well, you know what? It was amazing. And Bobby and I talked about this afternoon before we went on the air, in that you actually held off on introducing the what the hell do you call it? The what?
The
Megamod. Yeah.
Yeah, the Megamod. Yeah, the cootie.
Yeah, the big ugly cootie. Creature.
Until
page 188.
Well, that's when we had teasers. There's little teasers
after
some scenes. And then it was, at least in the form of the book we were reading, page 180, I think 184, 188.
Yeah, somewhere in there.
And, you know, I kept thinking, Stephanie, when you said started right away saying the what if, you had the what if. And of course, that's so often where authors start with is what if. Readers, I don't think we always think of the what if, but I did. As I got into this book, I thought she had to think to herself, what if there was a yada, yada, yada. Okay, she's going to teach. She's, that's where we're going.
and frankly, I deliberately kept the creature out of sight for the first part of the book.
Yeah.
Because that builds up a certain tension.
Yes.
in the reader. You know, you don't know what is this thing? What is it, what does it look like? What they see it and they scream, and then the next thing you know, they're finding bodies of the people that you just saw screaming. What has happened here?
Yes, exactly.
Yes. You know, they don't even find the body.
Exactly. So, it's like the old B horror movies.
Yes.
You know, you don't see the vampire until about halfway through, but you see the results of the vampire.
Exactly.
And by the time you see the vampire, you're so damn scared that when you finally see him, you know, you're covering your eyes, covering your ears, going to the bathroom, just getting the hell out of it.
And in the meantime, you really want to enjoy Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year's with Echo Omega and their friends and family. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Well, these folks know how to party.
that was what my fans were asking for at this point. I've got a couple of fan groups on Facebook. Uh-huh. And so I actually posted, polls in there. So what do you want to see? And I laid out some options there, and they were like, no, we want to see all of that. Mm-hmm. So like in one book, yes. Okay.
Well, you done good shoving it all in there.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. I tried to make it a case of, meanwhile, back at the ranch. Here's what's really going on back in New York City while they're celebrating the holidays. It was a lot of fun. It was like, okay, this is my version. This is my kaiju story.
it makes you want to be careful about things you carry with you that have lithium in them.
Yes. Careful of lithium.
Yeah. And now you know why those lithium batteries sometimes do weird things.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And if you pour it on snails, they melt. So, hey, we're good to go. It's like, you know, reading this book, and I told Bobby Jean earlier that it's like we have a little publishing company called Tuscany Bay Books, and we're doing planetary anthologies now. And after reading all of these science fiction stories, I swear to God, all you writers, sci-fi writers, get into a room and you try to outdo each other on names and planets and places. I mean, it's like some of these names are unpronounceable.
Yeah, I was saying to Jim, I'm not going to be able to refer to any characters tonight, but the two main, because I wouldn't have a clue how to say the person with the Z and the one that has a lot of hyphens.
Exactly.
You know. But it must be fun. It must be fun for you as a writer, yes?
It is. It is, because in some of the books in this series, I've actually come up with languages.
Uh-huh.
In the second book in the series, I actually wrote a poem in an alien language, Shades of Tolkien here. I actually sat down and I worked out the grammar and the syntax and everything. And it rhymes.
Wow.
Do regular low-born people scare you?
No.
Because we should be scaring the hell out of you right now.
No. I'm just saying, read the book.
Yeah, it's, you know, we were going to, my God, read the book.
Promote.
Selfless promotion.
Like location.
That's it. So, you know what? We got to take a real quick break. Bobby Jean, you're on.
Great. I have to tell you about something that is out of this world. So we've been running a contest. And you can check it out at our Facebook page, Out West, which is one word, Out West Shop Facebook. The contest ends at midnight tonight, Mountain Time. Very simple to enter. You can go to that page and get all the information. Our grand prize giveaway is worth $550, estimated retail value. And we're also be doing a first prize $100 gift certificate. This again ends at midnight tonight. Three simple steps to enter, and we would invite you to do so. Just go to Out West Shop on Facebook and you'll read all about it. And it's always a great day out west.
And there you have it. Straight from the horse's mouth, as it were. And what's your website address, Bobby Jean?
And again? The website is outwestshop.com.
Okay. And $550, and get in there before midnight tonight.
On Facebook before midnight tonight, Mountain
there
Time.
You go. There you go. Okay. Bobby Jean and I fell in love with Echo and Omega in the first book that we read. And you have done nothing but make these characters even better. And so I'd like to talk a little bit about character development, because that's such a big part of a story.
Sure.
When you first developed these characters, and I don't remember if I asked you this question, because I kind of skimmed through your last interview, but how much depth do you go in when you create the character, and how much of it do you put in the actual story?
I usually sit down and the first thing I do is I figure out what sort of person they are, just kind of generally, and what kind of place they're going to have in the story. And once I've done that, I will sit down and I'll work out the name of the character. And in this case, you know, you know them as Echo and Omega, but Echo was born Alex Ian Bryant, and Omega was born Megan McAllister. So, you know, I sit down and I figure out the names, and those names, sometimes they have symbolic meaning. Sometimes they just have meaning to me. In this particular instance, a lot of times I will, for my main characters, I will pull from my own genealogy. My mom, she had a couple of strokes a couple years back, and she's doing better now. But before that, she was very much into doing genealogy and stuff. Since then, she hasn't gotten back into it because she's just kind of busy recovering. But I will take her research and I will pull names from my own genealogy. So both Bryant and McAllister are names from my genealogy, and then I just picked given names that I liked for the characters. And so that's kind of the first thing that I do, because now I can. You know, I'm somewhere along the way in all of that, I have envisioned what they look like, more or less. So now I have a mental image of this person. I know their name. I know what they look like. I know what they sound like. I know where they're from. And then I just start kind of building on that. Now, what do I need? What sort of person would be attracted to this job? What sort of skills and abilities and specific intellectual abilities and knowledge does that person have to do this? And from there, I start building. You know, it's have you ever played D&D?
No, not me.
No.
Dungeons and Dragons?
No, never.
For those of the listeners who have, it's a little bit like playing D&D. In terms of building the character, only you're not using dice. You're just looking at what you need for the character to be. And it's rather more detailed than that. It's a gradual thing. And I find that as the series progresses, I develop the characters further and further. Because then they this is going to sound a little weird. They start to tell me things. You know, I start to find out more about their personal history and their background. And I start to realize, oh, well, this actually made them to where they can handle that sort of a situation really well because they know what they're doing. They've been there. or that really upset them, they really tend to want to avoid that kind of situation. And stuff like that. And then as the series progresses and they have all of these different adventures, then you have to take those adventures and their responses to it and factor it in.
Right.
So the character grows as sure. as the series goes.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. I totally understand what you're coming from, because I found that when you start a book, and I've got a series of characters that I've used in several books now, they dictate where they're going to go and what they're doing and how they handle things. And it's almost like they turn around on the page, they look at you and they say, shut up, I know what I'm doing.
Yes.
You know, and almost every writer we've talked to says the same thing. So that's got to be something to it.
Well, you know, I don't know. In one of my other series, in the Displaced Detective series, I that one postulates alternate realities. And one of the discussions between the two main characters, at one point they're like, well, what if our dreams and stuff are really our minds somehow accessing these alternate realities? What if an author somehow taps into this? B-tech out of me, I don't know. It was a fun idea to play around with in the book, but then after I wrote the book, I was like, well, dang. what did I come up with here?
Yeah.
So now it almost makes me bad when I kill somebody off.
Oh, no, believe me.
Do you do a character, not analysis necessarily, but even for minor characters? You know, we had Romero, we have some different characters, and many of them have a specific way of speaking because you write a lot of dialogue. Do you keep kind of a list of the characters by book, so you also remember who was in what book?
I do. I have, it's generally just a notepad file, but I keep a running series Bible. Oh, my cat's starting to get chatty. I don't know if you can hear him yelling.
Oh, yeah.
It's okay. We're all working at home.
his name is Elrond, half Siamese, and so he has that half Siamese voice. He's loud when he wants to be. Where were we?
Oh, character, that? a running character.
I have particularly for this year. This is the longest series I have yet written. So I actually have one main file that is the series Bible, and it covers main characters. It has a list of characters used. It has a list of planets used. I actually had to create an Excel file for the agent code names. The agent code names are variants on phonetic alphabets. Alpha, Bravo, Charlie, Delta.
You know. Right.
And so at one point I sat down and I dug out every phonetic alphabet that I could ever find used and put them all into this big spreadsheet. And then I'll just X them off as I use them. So I go to that spreadsheet to see what name I can use if I need a new agent.
Oh, that's fascinating.
I've got, you know, the Director Fox is Yiddish. So I have a couple of files of Yiddish words and phrases. I've got another file that is alien cuss words.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
And you know, Fox is fun. Fox, his background, I actually have written his background. But he spent a couple of decades. He was he was a teenager in a Nazi concentration camp.
Oh.
He was in Majdanek.
Mm-hmm.
And he survived. He's the only member of his family who survived. And he wound up immigrating to Israel, and he became a member of the Mossad. And he wound up getting almost killed in the Six-Day War. And he sacrificed himself to save an alien being who had gotten in the wrong place at the wrong time. And that alien being turned out to be the then president of the Galactic Coalition. And so, by way of paying him back, he rescued Franz Levy and saw to it that he had the appropriate treatment to keep him from dying. And Levy wound up becoming his chief bodyguard for like 2 decades.
Wow.
So Director Fox is a lot older than he looks, you know, galactic medicine being what it is. Excuse me, that hay fever is driving me up the wall. And he also has a lot more experience with the galaxy than anybody else on the planet, including the rest of the agents. So when he cusses, he's apt to do things like he'll throw in, you know, like some Yiddish and some of the various European languages, and then he'll switch over to about a half a dozen alien cuss words.
My kind of guy.
Yeah, I mean, and he's a practical joker. He has a great sense of humor. And I'm actually thinking, I'm toying with the idea of spinning off a series that is him and the Galactic President back in their younger years when they were going around and doing stuff together.
Mm.
And I'm still thinking on that one some, but I'm toying with the idea. But yeah, I have so much fun with this. I mean, as soon as I realized that he was going to be Yiddish, and he kind of told me he was going to be Yiddish, that he was Yiddish. I didn't know diddly squat about Yiddish. So I started investigating, you know, what, and then I realized these guys, I mean, their very cuss words are funny. Okay. And you know, that's their equivalent of go to hell. And what it means is get in the dirt.
Uh-huh.
In other words, bury you, you know?
Yeah. Okay.
You know, and and I realized, okay, this guy's got to have a sense of humor here. And so I made him a practical joker. And, you know, and then you start hearing some of the tales that come out about some of his previous exploits. And, you know, he's like, oh, no. Yes, the Galactic President is coming to dinner. No, don't make your peanut dressing for the salad. No, trust me on this. But why? Because of a practical joke I did one time. He's a Draconian. He is the embodiment of what we would think of as a dragon. He's about 9 or 10 feet tall. He has bat-like folding wings. He has scales. In the face, I speculated a lot about this, and I looked at a lot of different reptiles, and I finally decided he looks like a horned toad in the face.
Mm-hmm.
He's got the horns and everything, you know?
Uh-huh.
But it turns out they have a very high arch to the roof of their mouth. And peanut butter is sticky.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she sees where that's going.
Oh, yeah.
So he was so Franz Levy, a.k.a. Director Fox now, decided that he's gonna find out the truth of the matter. So he feeds he feeds Poggy some peanut butter. And Pool thinks the peanut butter just absolutely tastes delicious. And then it gets stuck up in the roof of his mouth, and he can't get it out for love nor money. And so it's up there for several days, and his tongue Good can't God. Get it out, and his toothbrush can't reach it because it doesn't have the right angle on it. And it's just getting nastier and nastier, and he's like, I don't ever want to see peanuts anything ever again, you know. So Franz is like, Fox is like, no, whatever you do, don't put peanut anything on the menu when the Galactic President is coming to dinner. Trust me on this, unless you want to revive the practical joke war, which he informed, and this he's telling his girlfriend this at this point, and he's like, the practical joke war, it turns out, culminated with the stink bomb in the engine room of Polgy's flagship. And the captain finally sat them both down and said, this has got to stop.
I can imagine why. Oh, my goodness. Let's talk a little bit about your process.
Okay.
Because you write some sick stuff. So your stories are chock full of stuff that no sane person would ever think about. So I suppose that's probably the multiple degrees and working with NASA and everything else. And the practical jokes that go on in NASA have got to be, well, way beyond me, but funnier as hell to you guys.
Well, occasionally, yeah, and occasionally one sneaks into the books someplace. Yes,
there you go.
It does happen. Yes,
there you go.
But for the most part, you know, the stuff that went on, the jokes that went on, people would not get.
Well, that's what I'm. That's what I said. Yeah, it's beyond us, mortal people.
Well, no, it's not that as much as it is that it's generally inside jokes within the business. Although once in a while, it's something a little more basic than that.
Gotcha.
I had a good friend and colleague, and we talked about everything under the sun. But it was a guy. And so occasionally we had been known to talk about, you know, Southernisms and dialects and all this kind of stuff. And he was talking to the vice president of the company. And I walked by in the hall, tucked my head. And just as I got even with my friend, I said, and this was a reference to the Southernisms and the dialect, I said, hi, sugar. Just loud enough for him to hear and the company vice president not to hear. But I also knew the company vice president because he lived down the street from me. So I wasn't too worried either way because he knew me well enough to know that, you know, okay, I'm just being a mischief with my buddy here.
Sure.
And he turned. And Andy turned 12 shades of red, and the vice president was like, huh? what's the matter here?
So, Stephanie, do you write all day, or do you have favorite times that you like to sit down and write?
I'm a night owl. I always have been. I guess it's, you know, comes naturally to somebody who considers themselves an astronomer. So my day looks like, you know, I'll get up around anywhere from 11 to 1, depending on how late I stayed up the night before. Mm-hmm. And I'll eat breakfast I've gotten to where I have to spend about 15 to 20 minutes, sometimes longer, petting my cat because he wants attention. So this is while I'm eating breakfast or whatever and just kind of generally waking up. I get online, I check my email, you know, all that kind of stuff, post any stuff that needs posting. Then I pull up the Word file that I've been writing in, and I read back through what I wrote the previous day,
mm-hmm.
and I edit as I go. Because, you know, I'm busy slamming stuff in there. I'm not looking at punctuation or spelling or, I leave out words and stuff. So, and then when I get to the end of what I wrote the day before, I'm kind of warmed up and back in the flow and I just keep going. I don't necessarily write everything in sequence.
Uh-huh.
A lot of writers, they start at the beginning of the book and write till they get to the end of the book.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the sure way to give me writer's block.
which was exactly going to be our next question.
Mm-hmm.
And Bobby Jean, go for it.
Yes. Yeah, so do you get writer's block? Yes or no? And if you do, how do you get around it? And if you don't believe in it, why not?
I do believe in it. I do get it. I have to be able to see and hear the scene before I can write it down. I may know what's supposed to be in it, but I don't have that visual yet, you know? For me, writing is like transcribing a movie in my head.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I know the synopsis of the movie, but the movie hasn't started playing yet, I can't write. And so I'm stuck until that starts congealing and things start moving.
Uh-huh.
So that's what I call writer's block. Your mileage may vary. What do I do? Jeez. Sometimes it depends. I have several beta. Sometimes I brainstorm with my husband, Daryl. Sometimes I brainstorm with one of my beta readers. If I'm here all by myself and it's 2 a.m. and I'm stuck and I'm like, doggone it, I know what's got to be here. I got to get this in. I've got a deadline going here. Sometimes I will just sit down and I will start writing down what I do know in a notepad file, and mm-hmm. it'll just be bullets. You know, I know that this has to happen, and I know that this has to happen, and I got to remember that this guy does this. And a lot of times, once I start getting all that written down, it'll start to click for me. And I'll start being able to see the film unwind in my head. And once that happens, bam, I'm writing. So a lot of times it's just a case of, if I'm brainstorming with somebody, it's a case of I'm using them to bounce the stuff off of instead
sure.
of writing it into the Word file.
Sure.
You know.
Sure.
So.
Okay, let's take a real quick break. And Ronan, if you wouldn't mind, please. You know, when Creative Edge Publicity was founded in 2016, they immediately showed they weren't the same as other publicity firms. No, they work closely with their individual clients' needs and goals and push harder to get them noticed. Creative Edge believes that communication is an important part of the partnership, and that model is how they have built their success. They collaborate and work with local, national, and international media outlets and organizations to meet their clients' goals and needs. So Creative Edge, it's your brand and your future. Mickey Mickelson, publicist, www.creative-edge.services. Okay, it is 7:41, and we are talking with writer Stephanie Osborne, one of the world's best and most prolific science fiction writers I have ever talked to. And she's got, I mean, she's just wonderful, wonderful series. And if you haven't read any Stephanie Osborne, you have to pick some of them up because they're just great books. And we're talking about writer's block, and let's move into a little bit on when you're writing and you're sitting down and your brain is working and you're rolling stuff through, how often do you follow your storyline? And if you do your characters change that line? Do your books end differently than you thought they were going to?
Well, I'm not a plotter. I'm principally a pantser.
Okay.
And since I don't necessarily write in sequence, a lot of times the end of the book is one of the, or at least the climax of the book is one of the first things that comes to me.
Mm-hmm.
So then it's a case of, okay, a lot of times the second thing is either, the ending or one of the secondary climaxes leading up to the main climax of the book. And once I've got those three things there, then it's a little bit like constructing an experiment, because then I extrapolate back to the initial conditions, and that gives me what should happen at the beginning of the book.
Okay.
But yes, sometimes the characters don't do what I expect them to do in getting from, you know. Basically, I write the main points, and then I connect the dots.
Okay,
and
yeah,
the dots don't always connect up the way I expect them to.
Right, and you have to make them connect so they're plausible.
Yes.
And that could be a challenge at times, especially when you're writing out of sequence.
Yeah, and sometimes it's as simple as I'm trying to make too much of this. You know,
right.
It's like... Right. I don't have to have a great big sequence to get from point B to point C here. All I got to do is say, so and so rested up, and you know, and things were quiet, and then the big, you know what hit. You know, sometimes that's really all you got to do.
Right.
So yeah, but every once in a while, my characters kind of. I know this is one of those things where when it happens, I sometimes wonder if they aren't in an alternate universe someplace. and because sometimes they'll say, no, I'm not going to do that. Well,
right.
But you're supposed to do this to get to there. Yeah, but I'm going to go around this way. But I'm going to go around this way. I don't care. This is what I'm going to do. Deal with it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay.
Yeah. It's kind of like dialogue. You know, I have characters that, in a book I just finished first part of last year, Jefferson's Chance, one of the characters is a kind of a stoic old Texas Ranger. And I was starting to write this almost like a soliloquy. And then I thought for a minute, wait a minute. Caleb would never say that. He's a three-word guy. You know, so I had to back up and I go, okay, what would he say? You know, when something happens that, you know, he's got a feelings about. But what would he say? What he said was, I ain't dead yet.
or all hail.
Exactly.
Or yeah.
You know. Oh,
I
totally get that. So I mean, and most of the writers all of the writers that we talk to in the show have said the same thing about their characters. Everything is character driven in their books. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if, as long as it's fiction, characters control the flow of the book. They have to.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, it's kind of interesting because I've had, it's not fan mail anymore. It's more like fan
email
or private
yeah.
messaging, you know?
Right.
But I've had them tell me things like, I was seeing the news the other day, and this happened, and I saw that so-and-so had the same name as such-and-such, and I wanted to ask you if he was upset about that.
Okay.
And such-and-such
was
being
he?
One of my characters. And then by the end of the email, they catch themselves, oh, well, you know, I guess that was kind of stupid, wasn't it? It's not a real person. And I was like, well, you know, I appreciate that you think of them as real people, you know, that tells me I'm doing something right in
right.
all of this.
Exactly. And that's one thing about character development that a lot of new writers don't understand is if you're not treating these characters like they're real people, they're never going to come across as a character that's worthy of reading about.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Bobby, we've read a lot of books.
Oh, yes.
And some of them have had characters that were totally unbelievable.
Or they're not true to themselves.
Exactly. Or they're so shallow that you don't care.
Well, that's the other thing. Yeah, very flat.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
I try very hard not even the cannon fodder characters.
Right.
I try to at least make, you know, something unusual about something different.
Right. I even try to make them kind of a slap happy, so at least you get a chuckle out of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I mean, you don't care whether they live or die, like Lenny and Whitey. You don't care, but they're so fun to read because they're like old women. So
yeah.
You've got how many more books coming out in this series?
Oh, well, we're on number 12. I've got roughly planned out through at least 18 now, other day.
Holy mackerel! Well, I said, holy mackerel. And you know what? We're running out of time. We've got like 3 minutes left.
Oh, okay.
This night has just gone by like a zip tie.
Like a zip tie.
That happens, though. That happens when you get somebody who's fascinating on and you're listening to this great stuff, and all of a sudden you look at your watch and you go, holy crap, we're out of time. So,
For what it's worth, the Division One series is currently available on Kindle Unlimited. So if you're a member, you can get it for free and read it.
Correct. And all of them are available on Amazon and all the online booksellers.
Yes.
And this particular one is Mega Moth. Yes. And it came out a month ago.
In January.
So congratulations. I don't know how your sales are, but I'm sure they're great.
Well, I'm still working on this whole making a living at being an author thing, but things are gradually climbing up there.
Oh, there you go. So, it's much easier when you don't have to worry about your day job.
It is.
Yep.
But then it can be scary too. So.
Well, yes, ma'am. you wouldn't mind giving our listeners your contact information. We'd love to have it.
Well, the best thing to do is to either hit me up at my website, stephanie-osborne.com, or to come on over to Facebook and hunt me up on Facebook and say hi.
Perfect. And Stephanie has got probably books that she's written and collaborated with about 50 out there right now, I'm going to guess.
Thereabouts, yeah. If it's not there yet, it's close.
You can't go wrong. Pick up a Stephanie Osborne book and read it if you like sci-fi. Even if you don't, characters in these things are great. And Stephanie, thank you so much for spending, I know it's getting late there, for spending an evening with us here in this little tiny radio show that we do every Thursday. We really appreciate your time.
Well, thank you for having me.
Oh, we loved having you. And come back and visit us when you get another couple books out.
Yeah, you start to reserve a time for her already, Jim.
I know, how we probably should. we are booked through October, however.
Okay.
Well, thanks again, Stephanie.
Thank you.
All
right. And next week, we have another return writer who's been on the show twice before. She's also a call-in expert. Claire Fuller's in, and she has been, you know, we have favorites on this show, Bobby, and we unabashedly admit that no matter what.
We do. Claire is one of them.
Oh my God, Claire is just like, she's one at the top of the list. We love all our writers, but Claire Fullerton has carved a niche in this show, and we just absolutely adore her. And she's going to be back with us next week. Her first visit was October of 2015. So that's another one that's been like five years.
In the studio.
On their way
to Monterey to celebrate their anniversary, yes. Monterey or Carmel.
Yeah.
They had delayed a day so they'd be able to actually visit with us. We loved that, didn't we?
We did. And her last visit was August 30th. And that was 2018.
Okay.
That was two years ago. She's back with us again next Thursday, along with, of course, Henry Park, the first Thursday of the month. And Henry has graciously agreed to do the audiobook for Last Lonely Trail.
Awesome.
So that's going to be a lot of fun. So, Mrs. Bell,
Yes.
Another great show down the drain. And looking forward to next week again. So for Bobby Jean and myself and Russ Avison and, of course, Ronan Rosner and Sam Hassan, who owns LA Talk Radio, we are out of here.